Good morning, everyone. It's Candace from Autism One Media, Autism One Radio. And today we have Christina Hildebrand from A Voice for Choice Advocacy.org. Good morning, Christina.
Good morning, Candace. How are you?
Good. I understand you've been spending a lot of time at the Capitol. So today we're just going to go over SB 276 and see what's going on. Take it away, Christina.
So there are actually three bills that we're going to talk about, 276, 714, and 283. And they're all the 276, SB 276 and 714 are now related. And I'll go into a little bit of background for those people who have not been following it as closely as others. SB 276 was introduced this year by Senator Penn, same person who introduced SB 277 in 2015 that took away the personal belief exemption for vaccinations for school in California. SB 276 basically went through the legislature in the correct fashion, so to speak, and it basically takes away much of the medical exemption criteria and also cracks down on the doctors who are willing to write medical exemptions or do medical exemption evaluations. We knew this was coming back last year. Actually, we've been thinking that it was coming for quite a few years, but we did know that it was on its way because Penn had been doing many press releases and also had released a study in pediatrics, or not, it wasn't a study, it was a article in pediatrics. And basically, SB 276, in its form currently, would have, or what it does is, it reduces the medical exemption criteria down to the CDC, ACIP, and AAP. What's interesting is it says the medical exemption criteria that those organizations have. Now, none of those organizations actually have medical exemption criteria, so what the bill refers to is actually questionable because they don't have medical exemption criteria. What they have are vaccination guidelines. And vaccination guidelines don't really equal criteria. And so we're a little bit worried that the guidelines are going to get codified into criteria, which are two very different things. Having said that, if you look at what those guidelines are, they're basically CDC precautions and contraindications. So your child has to have had an anaphylactic shock or be severely allergic to a vaccine, but it can only be that one vaccine. So if your child has had a reaction to, let's say, the DTaP vaccine, that child is considered fine to get all the rest of the vaccines. And as we know, many of the vaccines have similar ingredients, and most likely the reason why you have an anaphylactic shock is that you're allergic to some ingredient that could also be an ingredient in a different vaccine. So the criteria, if we go with the criteria being the guidelines, they are very much restrictive. There is a reference to family history in the bill, but it is family history that's related to the standard of care. And the question really is, what is standard of care? What's considered standard of care? And, you know, most doctors or most organizations say that standard of care is getting as vaccinated as you can. So it really doesn't lend to what SB 277, you know, a few years ago, has a really robust medical exemption, and both Governor Brown and many of the legislators voted on SB 277 because it had that robust medical exemption, which includes family history, genetics. You know, basically, if you have a sibling that has seizures daily because of a vaccine reaction, that other sibling would not have to be vaccinated. With this, there's no family history of vaccine reaction being allowable anymore. So it cut down the criteria. It also created this arbitrary number five, this magic number five, that if a doctor writes five or more medical exemptions in a year, their medical exemptions will be reviewed. And there's nothing in the bill that actually says what that means. So they will be reviewed. It's not clear if those five will be reviewed, and if you get check marks for all five, then you're off the hook and you're good to go. Or if, you know, everything in the future will be reviewed, everything in the past will be reviewed, doesn't say anything. It's basically up to the CDPH officer right now to determine that.
Okay, what is CDPH?
Sorry, the California Public Health Department. And so that's another piece of this bill is, so usually doctors, they're overseen by the medical board. and that's where their licensing sits. If they have any complaints put against them, if they have any issues with the doctor, it goes to the California Medical Board. This bill expands that and puts all medical exemption issues under the California Public Health Department. And we'll get into, I kind of want to go through the bill first, and then we'll get into why that is troublesome.
Okay.
The other thing that, you know, in this magic number five, and, you know, our doctors that we've been going around the Capitol with equate it to an audit. So, for example, if you know you've done your taxes correctly, you've got an accountant that did your taxes, you're pretty much 99% sure that you did them correctly. And you've been told, okay, there are five pieces of paper that you need to hand in. You don't need to hand them in, but there are five pieces of paper you could hand in. And you hand in the first four, and you know nothing's going to happen. But that fifth one will absolutely 100% trigger an audit of your taxes. The question is, would you hand in that fifth piece of paper, not knowing, even if you think you've done everything right, you know, you wouldn't hand it in. You wouldn't do it because you don't know what's going to happen. And the way this bill is written, there's no guidelines for a doctor that show what is and is not acceptable for a medical exemption. So it's like, I equated it the other day to somebody. I said, you know, my daughter's in high school and she's taking honors biology. And it's like her biology teacher saying, okay, these are the topics that we're going to study this year. You need to hand in a paper for every topic. You can go on the internet. You can research it as much as you want. You need to hand in the paper. I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to judge the paper on, but you need to hand it in. And then she, when she gets the paper, the teacher gets the paper, the teacher grades it on whatever she thinks should have been put in the paper. Well, could be completely different. My daughter could have written the most amazing paper, but because it didn't satisfy the points that the teacher was, you know, wanting, she gets an F for it. And that's what this is. There's no place where the doctors know what is and what is not acceptable and what research they can be using. You know, those types of things. The other thing is that things like temporary medical exemptions, which are written for children who, you know, they may be getting vaccinated along the course, but very slowly because they've got autoimmune issues or for whatever reason. Or even, you know, right now, if a child comes in with an ear infection and needs to get their vaccination for school, they would have to have a medical exemption to get into school. And so that triggers that number five as well. So the doctors are very wary of moving forward with this. The other pieces of this puzzle, there's an appeals process. Again, the appeals process is not defined at all. There are three physicians that will review the information, but who knows what those three physicians will be reviewing. It's really troublesome. So I will say this bill has probably been the biggest roller coaster of the last sort of probably month. And we expected, so the bill was held in appropriations in the suspense file because it had a fiscal impact. We expected it to come out of appropriations because Lorena Gonzalez is the chair and she's a principal co-author on this bill. And we assumed that there would be some form of amendment. Let me go back also to say that in June of this year, the governor came out verbally and said, you know, I am not happy with this bill. It takes away the doctor-patient relationship. I'm not happy with it. When that happened, there was a flurry of amendments. PAN's office and the HHS department worked with the governor's office, supposedly, to get the amendments that he wanted in there. The governor then came out at the beginning of August and again said he was inclined to sign it, but he still had issues with the bill. And so, you know, our assumption was that there would be amendments to this bill because you don't push a bill through that the governor has said he wants amendments to unless you don't want it signed. And so we were really surprised to see it come out of appropriations and be pushed onto the assembly floor, which was the next stage, voted on the assembly floor on Monday, and then pushed through the Senate floor on Tuesday with absolutely no amendments. And so what was interesting was on
Monday evening, after it went through, or afternoon, when after it went through the assembly floor, the governor's office tweeted out, you know, you've just pushed it through the assembly floor, but I still have amendments. And I will say, you know, I feel like the governor has not been been shown clearly by our media. I think it's unfortunate that our media supports Senator Pan more than they do our governor. You know, they were saying, you know, you made a deal in June, you signed off on it. And I was just like, you know, if you've been watching the media, if you've been watching Gavin Newsom, you knew in August that he wasn't happy with the bill. I mean, Pan is so incredibly arrogant. I mean, the fact that he didn't go to the governor's office and say, before I put this on the assembly floor, are we good? You know, are you going to red stamp, you know, are you going to stamp this? Are we good to go? No, he didn't do any of that. And so it landed on Monday afternoon with the governor saying, I'm not going to sign this unless my amendments, my further amendments are made. So what happened then was there were three things that could happen. One was that Penn continues with SB 276 and doesn't do anything about amendments. And in doing that, it gets to the governor's desk and would have likely been vetoed by the governor. That would have been our preference. Number two was that the assembly floor vote be expunged. So what that means is that they would have taken the vote and just pretended they had never voted on it. He would have made the amendments to that bill, to SB 276, and then he would have the assembly floor vote again and the Senate floor vote. Or the third option, which is the option that actually happened, was he continues with SB 276, gets it to the governor's desk, and he then takes, Senator Pan then takes another bill and basically guts and amends it. It had to be a bill that was on the assembly floor already, and or going to the assembly floor, let's say. He had to basically take all the wording out, put the amendments in there, and then move that through the assembly floor and the Senate floor. He did that, and it was published yesterday at SB 714. The issue with this is that, and there are many issues, one of them that this bill never has to see a policy committee. It never has to go through the Appropriations Committee. So it basically is getting a free ride. It doesn't matter what it does. It just gets a free ride. The amendments that were made in that bill were amendments that Gavin Newsom requested, but they also go much further than what Gavin Newsom requested or what we were, you know, what we saw that he requested. And one of the huge things in this bill is that it now has, so the bill previously had a grandfathering in clause where anyone that had a medical exemption prior to 2021, that medical exemption would go into a database and would only be reviewed if your doctor triggered that number 5 or your school was under 95% vaccinated. And so we know that most of our parents who have medical exemptions have them from doctors who write a lot of medical exemptions, write more than 4. I mean, 4 is a very small number when you have a patient practice of, you know, 5,000 or so, which many doctors do. So we knew that many of them would get triggered. But at the same time, because they were in a separate database, the question was, you know, how much would that database actually be queried and that kind of thing. It gave them a little bit of, not much comfort, but a little bit of comfort. The changes that have been made in SB 714 with respect to the grandfathering in mean that none of those medical exemptions that are on file prior to January of 2020 are acceptable. And so every single person is going to have to go get a new medical exemption. And in order to get a new medical exemption, they have to, it's actually not clear, but it looks like they have to be in line with the CDC contraindications and precautions. So basically, what would have allowed parents to be grandfathered in to use their old medical exemptions that were completely legitimate under SB 277. So these are medical exemptions that were written in the past 4 years, completely legitimately given, or will now no longer be available if their doctor, you know, if it, and it, they put in the grade span, so you have to be checked at preschool, kindergarten, seventh grade. But basically, if you have a medical exemption that's on file, even in the mid grade, it there's a clause that says every time you're readmitted to school, well, for example, my school has it's a private school and we have a yearly contract. So does that mean every year that my child gets readmitted, so to speak, we have to have a new medical exemption? And everyone who hits one of those checkpoints has to get a new medical exemption.
And ninth grade too. I mean, because we have middle schools, you know, it's seventh
right.
and eighth, and then
right.
high school is ninth,
yep.
10th, 11th, and 12th.
Yeah. So and actually middle school starts as either fifth or sixth grade. So there are many, many more checkpoints. And, you know, I will say, my guess is Senator Penn and the CMA were in Newsom's office or not in Newsom's office, and they drew this together and they said to Newsom, yep, we've got, you know, your 5 points that you wanted here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, we've got those all in there, we're good to go, thank you very much, you agree if we have these things in there that you'll sign it? And he says yes, you know, and I'm guessing he didn't have anyone really read the bill and do an analysis of the bill for him yesterday because it was all at the last moment. And so he's, you know, I am sure he will sign off on this because he's between a rock and a hard place, but it has made the bill so much worse for so many parents. Because the other thing is you know, previously you had until July 2021, so we had a year and a half to basically get your ducks in a row and work out, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to homeschool? Are you going to move out of state? Are you going to vaccinate your child? Like, what of those things are going to happen? And you you could work it out. Whereas now we have literally 3 months to work it out. It's January 2020 is when part of this goes into effect. And so it is a rush and a scramble, and it's, you know, I just don't believe Governor Newsom actually has realized the analysis of the bill until after he said, yes, I'm good to go. And so, you know, I think we will have this bill. The other thing that it also doesn't allow for, if we had till 2021, if there were issues with the bill, there could have been a cleanup bill next year. And not that I think there will still be a cleanup bill, but it, you know, there are people that are having to deal with this in 3 months' time, and a cleanup bill doesn't happen until late next year being passed. So,
and Christina, I just want to make clear that kids with a IEP are still exempt.
They are, yes.
So
kids with an IEP are still exempt, and homeschoolers are still exempt.
Okay.
Yeah. But to me, the question really is, you know, where are the schools? The school districts are going to lose a huge number of kids starting next year. Their ADA is already flagging in many school districts, and they are going to lose, in our analysis, it was, you know, somewhere in the course of $600 million in ADA. We saw that in New York State, when this went into effect within 2 weeks, the school attendance is down, public school attendance is down by 10%. They've lost 10% of their ADA with this bill having passed.
What is ADA?
A similar thing. ADA is average daily allowance. So it's basically the amount of money that the schools get per student in each school.
And I looked that up. It's like between $50 and $60. I think it's $53 a day or $58
a day. Yeah, it's about $11,000 a year per student. And that, you know, schools keep on going. If their class size goes from 30 to 24, they don't close the school down, but they have no way to make up those, you know, that $66,000 that they lost from six kids not being in that school. So I'm amazed that the school districts haven't come out questioning this, because while they may be saying, well, it's just a small percentage, it's a small percentage, but it's a large part of their budget. So it's interesting. I mean, we'll see what happens, but I can see the same thing happening as in New York. I can see we've both already in the last 5 years since SB 277 seen our school numbers go down dramatically in California. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see where this goes, but it is really, really serious. And this second bill has made it so much worse. I mean, just put things in place that are just, You know, SB 276 is bad. This makes it, you know, 100 times worse. And so, you know, I think we our organization, Voice for Choice Advocacy, is regrouping and seeing, you know, what do we do at this point. I think I would love to transition. I have to go in a few minutes, but I would love to transition over to AB 283, which is another bill separate from this, but it does have to do with vaccinations. And it's really, to me, it's another sad state of politics. And this is where, you know, politics drives over policy so much. And that's what I've realized over the last 4 years, is that really politics is the thing that trumps everything. And it's just really, really unfortunate that policy isn't taken more seriously and that politics comes into play. AB 283 is a bill that deals with CalWORKs. CalWORKs is a assistance program for parents with that are trying to get back into the workforce. It gives money to them, cash money to them, on a monthly basis. You have to show that you are looking for work and that you're attempting to get work, or that you even have a part-time job but you can't get a full-time job or something that will, you know, give you enough assistance. And what CalWORKs, this bill was introduced by Assemblymember Chu, and he had a similar bill last year, AB 1992, which the Governor Brown at the time vetoed, which we were thankful for. So right now in statute with CalWORKs, you have the option of having a personal belief exemption for vaccinations. Assemblymember Chu is an interesting person, and he abstained on SB 277 because we believed he understood the vaccination issue, and he was concerned with the number of vaccinations given under the age of two. So we assumed that he would abstain from SB 276. It amazes me the number of legislators that were there during SB 277 that abstained on SB 277 or voted no on SB 277 and then voted yes on SB 276, which makes SB 277 10,000 times worse. So it's kind of like, okay, you were against it initially, but now you're for SB 277 and worse. You know, to me, the CMA and Senator Pan have done some convincing or wheeling and dealing there. AB 283, basically, initially, we supported the bill. When it was introduced, we supported the bill. And Assemblymember Chu's statement on it is he does not believe that in order to get public assistance for not being able to work but having kids, being basically below the poverty line, should be tied to either truancy in school or vaccinations. And so the initial bill basically took those clauses out. Therefore, you don't have to, you know, if your child's truant, you don't get extra penalized by the CalWORKs program. And if your child is not fully vaccinated, you also don't get penalized by the CalWORKs program. You would be able to get your CalWORKs money without having to show proof of, you know, either of those two things. Or you know, if your child falls into those two things, you would still get your money, your assistance. We absolutely agree with that. We don't think there should be anything tied to government assistance, especially when it comes to, you know, forced medical treatment. So we completely agreed with Assemblymember Chu at that point. Unfortunately, when it went through the Assembly Appropriations Committee, which is Lorena Gonzalez, as I said, you know, she's a co-author on SB 276, was a co-author on SB 277. She put in the clause that basically she put back in that you have to be vaccinated, took out the personal belief exemption that is in current law, and so that's how it moved forward. Now, at that point, there was a $50 fine if you didn't get your vaccination records in or a medical exemption in by 60 days. So you would get $50 docked off of your assistance. So we weren't particularly happy with the $50. It then went through Senate appropriations and came out of Senate appropriations with an even worse docking. It basically said in the calculation for the CalWORKs, you would, the caretaker or the parent, basically the adult family members, would not be taken into consideration when the if you didn't have your vaccination records on file or a medical exemption on file. That's what it was, and you know, the argument is that's what it is in existing law. The difference is in existing law you have a personal belief exemption that you can opt out of that. So it's easy enough to get your assistance right now because you can sign a personal belief exemption. So most parents were not having that docked because they could sign a personal belief exemption. Right now, basically, it takes out the personal belief exemption. And so what's happening is if you have two parents who are on the CalWORKs program and one child, that family will get around $750 per month. The if you take away the two parents, they're only getting $350 per month. So it's basically halving their assistance from this program. And so that's where we have a real issue with it. And because it criticizes those people, harms them so much because it takes away so much of their assistance program or assistance every month.
Oh my. Well, Christina, I want to thank you for all your work on this. I know you've been up there much and working really hard and just going through these bills.
Yeah, I feel like we've been working so hard and we get heard. I feel like we get heard when we are in the meetings and in the building, but it never seems to translate. And that's where, you know, I say the politics of this all trumps the policy. I think, you know, we have so many legislators that have said, wow, you make sense. That makes sense. I will say, you know, my hope is that and I know that this year we have made A Voice for Choice Advocacy has made huge strides in the Capitol. We're definitely seen as, you know, a professional and an organization to be listened to and that has rational thought and rational arguments. And so, you know, my hope is that in the next year we can bring forward legislation that would rectify some of these issues.
Yeah, you know, that was my experience with Hannah Beth Jackson. I felt like I was being heard and all my points were considered and even agreed with, and then when it came right down to it, they voted against us or for SB 277. So it kind of burst my bubble and discouraged me. So I guess we just have to keep on.
Yeah, we do.
Well, thank you, Christina.
I know none of us are going away, so we just have to keep fighting. All right,
thank you.
Thanks, Candace.
Nice day. Be well.
Yep. Sorry. Thank you. Bye-bye.